I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand. Walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for a place called Eho Fooks.
That's right. KVSC News Time is 3:25. Rob Callahan here with Dot Johnson and Governor Jesse Ventura. Welcome, Mr. Governor.
Oh, memories of the inauguration. That was a lot of fun that night. You know what I've done since?
A lot?
No, I played drums with Carlos Santana.
Really?
Yeah.
Where at?
At the Target Center. When he came to town, I met him before the show. And, of course, Carlos is from my era, you know, the original Woodstock in the 60s and all that. And halfway through the show, he sent word down that he wanted me to come up and play. And I said, what? And they said, we'll find something. So he uses three sets of drums, so I took over one of the drumming
areas. I did not know you were a drummer.
And I'm not.
Okay.
But if you have rhythm, you know, and you have artists at the level of Mr. Santana, it don't matter if you can play.
Okay.
It'll blend in. No, so we played Supernatural together on the concert, and it was terrific.
Now, is there a tape of that anywhere?
I don't know. You know, this was a, you know, the regular closed-door concert, so they probably didn't. If it does, it's bootleg, because I'm sure it's not legitimately taped.
Okay, well, let's get right into our interview.
Okay, first of all, Governor Ventura, I'd like to ask you what message you're bringing to campus and to the students here today.
Well, the message that I'm bringing here today is get out and vote.
Okay.
You know, it's that simple. You know, voting is easy. It's something that the message I'm carrying to the young people, believe it or not, is don't blow it. Because what I'm saying to them is that imagine if they could for a moment being back in my time when you could be drafted at 18 years of age, you could be sent to the Vietnam War and die, and yet you couldn't even vote. You couldn't even determine who was sending you there. We fought very hard to get that lowered from 21 to 18. And I think that kids today shouldn't sit back and realize that there was a price paid to be able to vote at 18 years of age, and that they're getting it handed to them on a silver platter. My other message to them is that, yes, it's difficult to get into it because all you hear about are prescription drugs and Social Security, which hardly affects a kid your age, your mm-hmm. ages. I mean, I was there once, I know that. But the point of the matter is politics and politicians are never going to pay attention to you unless you vote. They know to focus in on the elderly because elderly vote. They know the elderly can make a difference in an election. Well, I know young people can make a difference in an election because they came out and voted when I ran.
Yeah.
And I want to keep them voting their heart and conscience. Don't vote for a winner, but vote for whoever you think best serves you the best. And again, it's a situation you can vote at 18 and you don't realize. I enlisted in the Navy, spent a year being trained at a 9-month deployment to Vietnam and Southeast Asia, and came back and couldn't even vote. Because it didn't change till 1972.
Okay. So basically, get out, take advantage of the right that you've been given.
And not only that, but if they want to be noticed, they have the third-party movement in the palm of their hands right now. Young people, if they organize and get together and force the third party onto the two-party system, they have the power to do that. They have the power by voting third-party candidates to be able to do that.
Now that actually is a perfect lead to the next question we have for you. It's about the third-party movement. You, of course, third-party governor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you your opinion on the debates. Now, when you were running for governor, you polled at something like, I think, 9% before the debates.
10%.
Mm-hmm. And then you got in, and, of course, you blew the opponents away.
Yep.
And we've got the Presidential Debate Commission locking out third- and fourth-party candidates now. How do you feel about that?
I'm offended by it because it's a clear example that they're looking nationally and they don't want another Jesse Ventura. They don't want me or someone like me on the horizon again. So what easier way to do it? Set the bar level so high no one can participate. It's absurd. Go back to 92 and look at what happened then. There should have been a public outcry. Ross Perot was allowed to debate. He got 19% of the vote. Right? One mm-hmm. out of every five. 1996, he was not allowed to debate. Where's the public outcry over that? And of course he fell. His vote total fell to single digits then. They cut him out. How do you cut out someone who got one out of every five votes the election before?
I'd imagine that a lot of people didn't even know he was running again.
Exactly. And the point being is that the other reason these other candidates should be included, at least at a certain level, there should be a threshold naturally, but at a certain level, is because they will bring forward issues that the major two parties won't touch with a 10-foot pole. and they'll never be asked nor never answered.
Okay. I wanted to kind of bring it back to Minnesota, and I got to apologize. I'm going to pitch you a hardball here. It's about the state legislature convening in January with a budget year, and in 98 you were really vocal about cutting funding to public radio and other programs. KVSC is part of a network of 14 statewide community volunteer-based radio stations. I'm sure you knew that. And we get very minimal state funding as it is. And we were just wondering, can you explain the reason for cutting funding other than, I guess, NPR, you've really explained yourself quite well on that. But for those of us who are smaller stations.
Well, again, it's a case of okay, then if we're going to fund your station, why shouldn't we fund WCCO, KQRS? Why don't we fund all radio stations then? It's a marketplace. And my belief is very strongly that, you know, you have to go out and compete. And you have to have a viable product out there. And to simply fund one station and not fund others, how do you explain the fairness of that? When I worked in radio, we had to hustle. We had to go out and get sponsors and advertisers.
And like us, you had mics held together with duct tape.
Exactly. And yet you can go to NPR and you see state of the art, that you see three producers for every show, and you see all of this happening. And the point is, we fund them so little now anyway that there's no reason they can't market. You're telling me they can't market Big Bird and all that and make money off it and fund themselves? The point for me is simply it's a thing of fairness, that how do you fund one and not fund another?
Okay. Would you maybe consider or being a little more lenient with something like this, a university station where people are trained to go into the field later on?
Maybe. You know, if you put it into a learning atmosphere, then it could become part of the education budget, you know, of putting it into there. If this is truly part of education here at the university, well, then maybe it should be looked at as such, as an educational tool at that point. But if it's simply an entertainment, if you're here to simply entertain, well, then I think you have to go out and compete in that entertainment marketplace, and that you don't favor one portion of entertainment over another portion of entertainment.
Yeah, I think another thing with what, you know, Rob is talking about is smaller stations like us that aren't, you know, the Minnesota Public Radio stations, all of our work is volunteer work. We do go out and we fundraise twice a year, and with those funds we raise $30,000. Obviously that isn't enough to afford equipment, quality equipment that works. None of our money goes into pockets, you know.
Do you advertise?
Of advertising we do, underwriters, what
okay.
we can, what we legally can do. You know, basically it's, we're working hard with what we've got, and cutting back $25,000 to a station like us is a big deal.
Yep.
And so we just wanted to ask, you know, your opinion on that.
And I gave it to you.
Okay, thanks. Another thing we'd like to talk to you about today is your sentiments for post-secondary school have been that college is not for everybody. But in Minnesota, college is for a lot of people. There are 61,000 students in MinSCU and 50,000 plus in the University of Minnesota who chose to attend a university. But with increasing tuition, students are struggling to stay alive academically. Personally, I spent $100 on one book at the bookstore. Take that times six classes, and you can see that before I step foot onto the university, I've got a debt of $600 in my backpack. Mm-hmm. Many students are forced to sacrifice the education that they're seeking at the university because they have to work full-time to finance it. How do you propose the state support struggling students?
Well, again, it's a case that, you know, you as a student have to look at your future and where that future lies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look in today's economy, a great deal of the jobs available out there are in the technical industry now.
Mm-hmm.
Technical college is only 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and again, you have to look at what's out there. And what is school there to do for you? School is there to prepare you for the job you're going to get when you leave it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's there to do for you. And so, therefore, you have to make a judgment as a student. Okay, what do I want my career to be? What can I afford to have my career to be? And again, I ask you this question, where in the books does it say you have to complete your education in 4 years? You can go part-time to school. You can hold down a job while you go to school to get your degree. Everything like that is available out there. And again, I'm not anti-school at all, because I realize that for us to compete in the global economy, the best way we do that is by a highly educated workforce. So it's imperative for us to ensure that that happens. But it becomes a vicious circle when professors want more money and more pay for the job they do. That creates the circle, and around it goes. And all I want people to remember is this, clearly, is that I don't create any money. Any money that government gives something to, they took it from someone else. So it's very philosophically easy to sit as a student and say, well, I deserve all this money so I can go to school. And then you come to realize, well, where does that money come from? Well, that comes from those people that are out there working every day that bring home a check, and they have to look at their check and see the gross of the check, and then see the net of the check, and realize half of the money that they're earning is not theirs. Someone else is using that. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, you have to remember. I always love to, you know what I enjoy hearing a lot? Is, generally speaking, students when they're in college are all Democrats and they're liberals. 20 years later, they become conservative Republicans because they've paid taxes now for 20 years. And so their values change. You know, once you start paying and you bring home a check and you're out working, and then you realize, I only get half of what I work for. The rest goes to the government.
Yeah.
So always remember that when you're getting money, it's the fruits of someone else's hard labor that you're getting that money from.
Yeah. And another thing, you know, as far as getting help financially from the state or a federal level, what about how the funds are distributed? You know, once they are taken from taxpayers, is there a way that those funds could be shifted from something else less important than education? Because education is extremely important for the future.
Sure. And, well, that's decisions you make by who you elect. So what does it come back down to? Voting.
Okay.
It comes back down to you get what you get by who gets elected to office. So that's why voting should be important to you. Because you're the ones that are electing the very people that'll make the decisions on what happens and what their priorities are.
Governor, we appreciate you coming down
Sure.
today, especially encouraging young people to vote. One last question
Sure.
for you. And it's about the extended family benefits to same-sex couples that you're
Yep.
pushing now. I understand there's a sizable Republican faction that's vowed to oppose the plan to the bitter end. And my question to you is it safe to say that the Republican stance is a side effect of the heavy influence that organized religion has in that party?
You'd have to ask them. But I would counter back, not only is it economically good for us at the state level, because we have to compete. To get employees to work for the state, you're competing with private sector companies. When 80 private sector companies are offering these benefits, how are you going to get good qualified workers to work for state government if they don't get the benefits that the private sector offers? And on a philosophical point of view, what I would say to these people, these Republicans that are opposed to this, I would ask them to sit there. When you have, first of all, do they prefer gay and lesbians to be in a monogamous relationship, or do they prefer them not to be? I would think it's to everyone's benefit to have them in a monogamous relationship, committed to each other, okay, with the AIDS and all the things that are out there that you can get. Second of all, I would challenge any one of them to sit in a hospital room. I had two friends that were gay in wrestling, been partners for 40 years. One of them died. The other one couldn't go in and sit at the deathbed because the rules of the hospital said spouse or next of kin. And because they weren't recognized for their 40-year relationship, I would challenge any one of these people to say, really? That's how hardcore you are? That's how brutally mean you are? Is that if someone had a 30 or 40-year relationship with another person, you would advocate they should not be allowed in that hospital bedroom to say their final goodbyes to each other? And they're supposed to be people of forgiveness and faith.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, we understand you've got to go to the university paper, and you're talking with Mr. Rotten later. So we'll let
All
you
right.
go on your way. Thanks
Thank
for stopping
you, and
by.
I hope you don't go off the air on my account.
I hope so, too.
You know,
we've got lots of duct tape in the station.
Either
though.
That or start playing those good doggone songs and have people listen to you. More Warren Zevon.
All right.
Have you heard his new one, Life Will Kill You?
Do we have it here?
Yes,
I working in news, I don't get to hear.
Oh, well, he's got a new album out, Life Will Kill You. It's fantastic, especially song 9.
Okay. Did you want to plug your book before you go?
Do I Stand Alone, Going to the Mat Against Political Pawns and Media Jackals. I highly recommend it for anyone that's at all interested in government or my perceptions of a year and a half as an outsider and what the media is like to deal with and the two-party system. It's good reading, especially at the college level.
Okay, thanks a lot, Governor.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
We're going to send the governor on his way with a local boy. This is Dylan Hicks with the song Governor of Fun on KVSC.